The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. Taking care of business and working overtime. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. I am Don Soa, welcoming you to the last day of the month of May. Last day for trading in the month of May. And, of course, we'll now gently ease you into the month of June. U.S. equities, were kind of unimpressive today. Traded primarily lower, not a lot, but, you know, unimpressive movements, very low trading volume. Investors sort of digesting a lot of economic data out there. But we did see a rise in technology stocks, and that helped to keep the losses from the decline from being too high or too low, I guess you might put it that way. The Dow Jones Industrials were down about 35 points. Goldman Sachs contributed probably the most to that loss. NASDAQ Composite traded down 0.1%. Now, that's despite the fact that some shares of Amazon did break through that $1,000 price tag for the first time, closing up above 1,000. The S&P 500 did slip marginally, with energy leading the decliners. But the information technology sector was up about 0.31%. Technology has been on fire pretty much all of this year, which it rose really as a sector about 20% overall. Nevertheless, the NASDAQ and the S&P were on track to snap a seven-day winning streak. The large tech outperformance, shall we say, it's become a bit of a trend. And it's a trend that most analysts would tell you that you shouldn't try to fight right now at this particular point. There is a lot of really good news out there that's actually priced into these stocks. And when people ask you why certain stocks are moving, certain sectors are moving, right now at least, and of course it's an intermittent thing, but right now they're not talking about politics. They're not talking about Trumponomics or the Trump, you know, recovery or anything else. I mean, the president has barely just gotten back into town, and he's going to probably figure out what he wants his agenda to look like as the week goes on. And ultimately, the market itself is reflecting some good economic conditions and some good information, good priced information related to some of the companies that we're tracking. Now, U.S. stock markets were closed on Monday because of the Memorial Day holiday. Personal income, though, rose. It was up about 0.4% in the month of April, which is right in line with what analysts and economists were expecting. And consumer spending increased by around 0.4% in the same time period. The Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, the Federal Reserve's preferred measure for inflation, it actually rose about 0.2% for the month. Now, the series stubbornly has not really risen to anywhere near what the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC, what its preferred level of inflation would be or should be. Now, despite failing to satisfy half of its dual mandate, the central bank will have very few problems processing down the path or progressing down the path to what we consider economic monetary normalization. And that's according to Jeremy Klein, who's with FNB Securities, the chief market strategist down there. Now, in the meantime, U.S. stock prices arose. Home prices were up about 5.8% in the month of March. And that's according to S&P Case-Shiller, the U.S. National Home Price Index. Other data released Tuesday, including consumer confidence readings for the month of May, which came in right around 117.9. Now, that's slightly below a consensus estimate of about 119, but still a pretty good number. Again, consumer confidence does matter. If people are feeling good about what they're doing, they'll spend more money. That will drive the economy better, and that, of course, translates into oftentimes higher stock prices. Indirectly or directly. Now, the economic data support the narrative that we have a pretty solid fundamental backdrop, according to Art Hogan. He's a market strategist with Wunderlich Securities, one of those guys you see on CNBC all the time. What we need here is some progress on the existing political agenda that was Well, sort of presented to the U.S. and presented to American financial decision makers back in January when Donald Trump was inaugurated. Donald Trump, the president, returned from his first trip overseas to deal with the fallout from reports that his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who is not only his son-in-law but also one of his most closest advisors, discussed the potential to set up a secret and secure communications channel between the Trump transition team and the Kremlin. Now, of course, this happened a while ago. Some of this was going on even before he was inaugurated as president. And, of course, the continued issues of the relationship between higher-ups in the Trump circle in Russia are an ongoing thing that just continues to distract the current administration, certainly distract the president from a lot of the things he'd like to be doing right now. I imagine Congress feels a little distracted, too. Stocks came into Tuesday's session today, having posted pretty strong gains in the previous week. Those gains propelled the S&P and the NASDAQ index to record highs. Now, what's driving the market here is the fact that interest rates have been so low lately. Everyone thought interest rates were going to be going up quite a bit and in the short term, but the opposite seems to have happened. And they like that. They like interest rates staying low. When the rates are going down or staying low, then bond prices can rise a little bit. So you're getting some capital appreciation there on the fixed income side. But also it probably means with the cost of money low, that's going to push it makes stocks more valuable when you're looking at pricing, price to earnings multiples and all those cool things that show market value. When you have low interest rates, it makes the market value more attractive. Now, the benchmark 10-year note, which a lot of stuff is based on, including mortgages, began 2017 trading near 2.5%. But right now, as of today, hovering around 2.22%. Again, if the dividend yield, that dividend is dropping, that means the value of the 10-year note is moving higher. Dallas Fed President Mark Robert Kaplan, he told folks over at CNBC today that he sees U.S. growth remaining near that 2% level, probably not the 3% or more forecast by the president's administration, but I don't think too many economists are really embracing that 3 and 4% type predictive indicator. That level of growth, we'll put it this way, to double the growth rate of the largest and most dynamic economy in the world is a major, major change, a major forecast adjustment. And I don't think anybody's predicting that level of activity. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if Kaplan is semi-right and we, instead of seeing maybe 3 or 4% growth, maybe we see 2.5%. And if the growth rate goes from 2 to 2.5%, that extra half a percent in GDP could mean literally is an increase of 25%. You could see earnings growth of 25% at the corporate level being translated to much, much higher stock prices. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program here on AM 790, your home of talking business. My name is Don Soa. The number to call here if you have a question for me is 437-5000. And the toll-free number is 888-345-0790. Our producer, Brian, yeah, he's here. He's chewing his nails right now, but guess what? Pretty soon he'll be taking your calls. If you can talk to me, fine. Let him know that, and he'll put you through. If you're not in a position, you're on the Wampanoag Trail or something like that, and it's not safe for you to talk, let him know that too, and give him your question, and he'll make sure that I get the question. And I will pass it. He'll pass it on, and I'll try to answer your question before you reach your destination. But in the meantime, continue listening to the program. I'm going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back with more Money Talk.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program here on AM 790. I'm Don Soa, delighted to have you here with us today on the last day, and certainly the last trading day of the month of May, entering June, starting tomorrow. The phone number to call here, if you have a question for me on the phone, we're here live at 437-5000. And if you're outside the immediate area, try 888. That's the toll-free number, 888-345-0790. In the meantime, Michael in Providence, welcome to the Money Talk program.
Today's Tuesday, isn't it?
It is Tuesday.
Okay, tomorrow's the 31st of May. Okay.
Oh, there's a 31st. Yeah, you know whose birthday that is? That's Brooke Shields' birthday. I completely forgot. I should have remembered that we actually have June 1st starts the following day.
Well, don't tell your wife that.
Don't tell my wife that. I was a big fan as a young boy. What can I do for you, Michael?
Okay, just another scenario question. Nice healthy correction, 15, 20, after 20% would probably be a little bit on the bearish side, I guess. What would you know, it looks like the people that participate in this thing seems like you said, Amazon and Google, and I'm fortunately enough, I own a good position in Microsoft. What would happen if it could oil and gas and do well? I mean, on a correction, it seems like something's got to give and something's got to take away and something's got to give to keep the flow going.
Michael, the issue with energy, unfortunately, is going to be based on demand. So if you really need to have an awful lot of global economic demand and activity. So there's going to be growth in markets, especially the dynamic markets like China and a few others who have been lagging lately. They haven't been growing as fast as they should. They haven't been using as much of natural resources. That includes metals, like natural metals like copper, steel, aluminum, and other things, as well as coal and oil and natural gas. We're not predicting prices. And I just came back from two different conferences, one in Europe and one in Nashville. And obviously the music was very different. But in real terms, the dynamics of the analysts looking at the domestic market here in North America and those looking overseas outside of not just the developed European market, but also the Asian markets as well, they're not looking to see the price of oil, petroleum, go up above $50, $55 a barrel. So that's really where you'd
For the next what?
They're looking out, they're looking 18 to 24 months. So they're saying, we don't anticipate major, maybe some bouncing around a little bit, but you're not looking at oil, say, above 55 before the end of 2018. Now, again, what are they basing that on? They're assuming that the information they're getting out of China is accurate. You know, not all of the information we get out of China is accurate. Does that sound fair? But that said, we're looking for a slowdown in U.S. activity probably, and I'm looking for a recession within the next 4 years. So, again, I'm not trying to be so predictive as to say it's going to be the third quarter of such and such. No, but we are looking at a series of historic elements going back to 2007 and 8. As the economy slowed down, we're not looking at a dramatic slowdown. We're not looking at a major recession, but we are looking at a period of time where the economy does not grow, and that could last for as much as, say, 6 to 9 months. So that all you need is two quarters of decline like that to qualify as an actual recession. But
so where's the value? Where's the value in your what markets? Asset classes?
First of all, I think you have to look at companies that are very, very important. So when you look at a company like an Apple, or as the one you mentioned, Microsoft, or Google, or any of the ones that are in that top echelon in the NASDAQ sector, they all represent substantial value and don't require a major correction to actually bring them into line. So I don't see them as being value stocks for a very long time. But I do believe you're going to see continued growth to higher levels as the demand for the products and services they offer continue to move a little bit higher. Now, this economy is not cheap. The market is not cheap right now. But if you look at all the comparative metrics we've got going back into the 90s, you know, right now, if you look at the price-to-earnings multiples and a few other factors, the market, when realizing that we're at a very, very low interest rate environment, this market is not considered expensive at that level. Now, granted, the low-hanging fruit may not be there to be picked. But all you need to see, I mentioned before, that obviously the government's saying, oh, yeah, we're going to grow the economy at 3% to 4%. Well, I don't see that happening. I just mentioned that's not really possible. But you're growing at around 1.8 to 2% right now. If we can grow by 2.5%, and there's a number of things that could come out of even Washington. And we're not saying that the Trump administration or the Republicans get all of what they want. But all they need to do is get some incremental pieces here and there, some financial reform on some levels, not all of the reform requirements, but some of it, some adjustments, some improvements in the cost structure on health care.
How about interest rates? Where's that? That's not going to go up that much.
Well, interest rates are not going up as fast as they thought they would be. Right now, they're moving up very slowly. As a matter of fact, I just mentioned in the first.
Too late to raise them.
Yeah, what happened just a short time ago, they just mentioned that the 10-year Treasury, which at the beginning of the year was at 2.5%, is right at 2.22 right now. That means it's actually going down. That's market-driven forces. And the Federal Reserve is not going to raise the Fed fund rate at dramatic rates or at a dramatic pace. They're going to go up, I'm thinking, maybe one or two moves by year end, and that still gets them barely over 1% as a Fed fund rate. So that's not going to put that kind of real pressure. So I'm not looking at the kind of monetary inflation that we thought might have been a potential risk here. There's only one thing that has to happen that is not predictable. It's not easy to measure. And that is the Federal Reserve is carrying over $4 trillion on their balance sheet with their treasuries and the mortgage-backed securities that they bought during their quantitative easing programs over the last few years. Those, they have to start unwinding some of those holdings. And as they do that, you're going to probably see some pressure, upside pressure on inflation. But you know something? Not enough of it to be problematic. And the Federal Reserve would actually like to see some inflation. I think that there's enough going on out there right now to keep 2017 on the books as a positive number. I'm telling people who are in a well-defined portfolio that owns, that has some stocks, that has some bonds, that has some alternative investments, including real estate and precious metals, if you're properly allocated at this stage of the game, you could finish up this year up 7% or better. I mean, many of those same accounts are up over 6 right now as we speak. I'd say the third quarter, the markets, you're going to see some sideways movement, but not, there's no big, I don't see a big correction in the offing this year. So the fourth quarter, you may see some upside, and who knows, you could finish up in a properly designed portfolio that's a little bit equity weighted. And that's going to be somewhere in that 7 to 8% range, potentially. Now, we'll be giving you more guidelines as we move into the new year, 2018, based on whether or not we're able to get any tax reform, which could just mean the repatriation of some of those foreign dollars. And that's something that the market and the Republican Congress is willing to do because it doesn't really increase the budget, which is, of course, what the Tea Party folks are concerned about. They want neutrality when it comes to those things. And I think that's doable. I think if they could do some tort reform on health care, that could bring some costs down there. I don't see a lot of money being earmarked at this point for infrastructure, which I regret. I wish they would, but they're not going to necessarily do that. But I think that the president and his people are going to start to realize that they can't get everything they want, and they're going to have to start looking incrementally on those things they can get. So the president's going to be having a lot more difficult conversations with the president of the Senate, head of the Senate, as well as Paul Ryan over there in the Congress. But I wouldn't be worrying too much about the next, say, 18 months as being the time in which this market's going to correct and offer lower prices. But I do think that people should be satisfied to get in the 5 to 7% range, perhaps over the next, say, 24 months, if they are properly allocated in their investments.
So oil and interest rates will still kind of stay on the lower bottom, or just kind of crawl. They'll crawl up a little bit.
Yeah, you're talking about slow and controlled, and that's what we're seeing. And actually, maybe even more, a little more controlled than I thought they would be. To be honest with you, Mike. I thought that we'd see a little bit more momentum there, and it's not happening. And we have a sense of why. So I think with that in mind, we're thinking that, hey, a little more normality, a little more stability in the next 18 months than we could have counted on. But when I start looking at the real evidence of inflationary signals emerging, hey, we'll be talking about it right here on the Money Talk program. So we'll give you a warning in advance. How's
that?
Okay,
we'll see what happens.
Michael, thanks so much for your call.
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Money Talk program on AM 790. Yeah, and yeah, we got Brian. And guess what? I see Crystal. She keeps moving back and forth, sliding in and out. She's sneaky like that. I mean, I don't know. I think she's trying to take over Brian's spot there. But I don't really, I thought by this time she'd be on her way home. But ultimately, in the end, we are taking your calls, as we mentioned before, at 437-5000. And the toll-free number is 888-345-0790. Now, before we went to the call, I mentioned that Bob Kaplan over at the Fed presidency and Dallas Fed president, he was talking about U.S. growth of being in that 2% range, not maybe in that double-digit 3 or 4% range that the Trump administration was hoping for. But two things do drive GDP, or gross domestic product. Growth in the labor force does, and growth in productivity does. Of course, Kaplan was talking about that on Squawk Box on CNBC earlier today. Now, the problem is labor force growth is very sluggish right now. It's growing, but it's sluggish. And in his judgment, and the judgment of their own economists at the Fed, especially at least the Dallas Fed, they think it's going to continue to be sluggish at least for the next 5 to 10 years because the population is aging and the labor force growth, therefore, is slowing. And I know, well, the only answer to that is not politically popular. That means we need more immigration. We need to bring more people in, especially people who either are skilled or who are at that age to go to college and develop skills to develop and use right here within our economy. There are a lot of businesses out there and people I talk to that are saying, we've got available jobs, high-paying jobs, but we don't have any skilled labor to take them. So what does that tell you? Well, it tells you you better start working on that because the job force, our job labor force, is not providing those jobs. So we better think about the alternative, and that may not be politically popular in this environment. Hey, folks, I'm Don Sauer. It's halftime here on the Money Talk program. You're listening to AM 790, your home of talking business, and we're going to be right back. So please stick around.
This is Money Talk with Don Sauer, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the second half of tonight's Money Talk program. My name is Don Sauer. Delighted to have you here with me tonight. Now, in the last segment, we were chatting, including with one of our callers, Mike, about the market itself. You know, and when people ask me questions about what my expectations are for a correction of some sort or the direction the market may go, what the expectations are for recession, I mean, I understand that all of this stuff is what everybody hears all day long. I mean, it's either on radio or television, or sometimes people have them on their smart devices, whatever, they're reading articles. And there's a lot of opinion out there. I mean, when I started doing this Money Talk program 26 years ago, there was not a lot of opinion out there. I mean, we were one of only a few programs, certainly one of very few that were on nightly, especially there's only one or two that were actually doing call-in nightly talk shows Monday through Friday. Now, since that time, of course, here we are 26 later, it seems like you get endless amounts, myriads of information and opinion thrown at you at light speed from 100 different directions. And I don't blame you for being confused. I don't blame you for sometimes being frustrated because all of the rhetoric, all of the news and the information sounds logical. Some of it sounds like it's being offered with some sort of, these people have credentials, don't they? I mean, they have a lot of positivity in their opinion. It sounds like they are, like they know what they're talking about. But of course, the problem is for every show you listen to, for every time you press the button, turn the knob, or make a change, you're actually getting a different opinion. And I find it most frustrating thing for me is when you watch cable TV and the financial programs that are on there, and they bring on. Anywhere, they're having one topic with one primary question. They bring on four different people, four different so-called experts to give you their opinions. We call them the talking heads. All the talking heads that are there, and, they go from person to person to person. And what do you really learn? Well, especially you learn very little, if anything, if out of the four of them, only two of them have a similar opinion, and then the other two are completely different. Well, you say, well, wait a minute. I just wasted all my time listening to the question, and then hearing four different answers, which seem to be from supposedly experienced, intelligent experts, and I'm learning nothing from it. Well, the reason we started doing the Money Talk program and the reason we continue to do it are different. We started in the beginning because a lot of people wanted to know about money. They wanted to understand the opportunities they were going to have, perhaps as their company started to offer some sort of an investment plan, a 401k or a 403b or anything like that. There were more opportunities for investors to put their money to work. Mutual funds were like almost a brand new type of investment entity. When I say brand new, there weren't that many of them out there. Some of the very well-known names like Fidelity were inching into that marketplace and offering different options. But even there, it became difficult. What's the difference between a stock fund and a bond fund? And what is this stuff they talk about, large cap, small cap? And a lot of the funds made it even more difficult by not actually telling you in their name what the fund did. They didn't say, oh, we're a large cap value fund or a small cap growth fund. They would say, oh, no, we have the name Magellan. Or in other words, they named it after some, some famous navigator or somebody that's out there. And, we understood it. They needed the names. But it didn't tell you what the Fidelity Magellan Fund did. Now you'd have to do your homework. You have to figure out where that was. And in those early days, getting back to basics, we took the time to tell you what a great many of these funds did, what they were designed to do, what they were trying to do, and who the managers were. Gave you a little bit of background about them and what their history was. What kind of success have they enjoyed up to this point? How much risk were you taking? I think it's funny, back in 1990-91 when we started the show, I was always concerned that so many listeners, so many potential investors didn't really understand that, yes, you are potentially setting yourselves up to make more money. You work hard for your money. You want to have that money work for you. But a lot of them didn't really understand the fact that they were accepting a higher level of risk in order to get that higher level of return. So the concept of risk-adjusted returns became more a part of the discussion. But, you know, no matter how you look at it, there's a lot of things that move markets. A lot of it has to do with how you as an investor, you as a consumer feel. It's more likely when you have a year like 2017 now. Now, we've had a nice run-up over the last 9 years or so. There have been years where the market was bumpy and volatile, but the market, you still had a wonderful opportunity to make money as a properly invested, diversified investor. And it was a good period, ultimately. Now, the question that people ask, and it's a reasonable one, is, well, will this trend continue? Well, it's more likely that stocks may take a little bit of a pause and maybe even move a little bit sideways, possibly, during the course of the summer. Yeah, take a pause and move sideways, more so than literally rolling over into what has historically been noted as a June swoon. And that's according to a number of strategists that we've been following. June is on average a sort of flat month, flattish sort of, in the fourth worst in terms of the S&P 500 performance as months go. But it also marks the start of the weak summer season for stocks or equities. Trading volume is reduced. Now, September is historically the worst month, and August the second worst month, followed by February, the third worst month. Now, it's very possible this market is range-bound for the summer. In other words, it's going to stay within a certain range. And if we don't get a significant amount of upside in areas of importance like earnings, or perhaps the second quarter ends up being a little less strong than the first quarter, or if there are some people out there really distracted by every little utterance of politics coming out of Washington, or maybe there's even a little bit of market fatigue. People just kind of tired of all the bouncing around. Well, it's a possible that we are in a range where the market moves up a little bit, it moves down a little bit, it moves up a little bit, it moves down. But ultimately, at the end of the summer, hasn't moved a lot higher in terms of real valuation than where we started at the beginning of June. Now, there are analysts out there like Kate Moore, who's over at BlackRock, one of the largest money managers on the planet. She said she believes that she has a hard time from things like valuation or sentiment perspectives, seeing reasons, though, for a big swoon. She doesn't see the reasons why. In other words, she's saying we don't really think we have to have one. Stocks have moved higher without regard for kind of the type of events that might normally trip up the market. You've had a lot of controversies surrounding President Trump around this campaign, about all the issues between him and his people in Russia. The Federal Reserve, you know, talks about rate hikes, and everybody's jumping up and down trying to figure out what the Fed is going to do. And perhaps a potentially stalled out congressional effort on things that we talked about here on this program, like tax reform. If that effort stalls out, a lot of these things are not necessarily seen as impediments to the stock market, which could, despite all of that, continue to grind slowly higher. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, the magnitude and the duration of any sell-off that could occur, or of sell-offs more recently, has been very, very disappointing to the bears, the people who are expecting the markets to go down, and they're perhaps investing in a manner to take advantage of that. As I said before, this particular analyst from BlackRock, she said that the economic and earnings fundamentals are the bigger catalysts right now behind the stock market moving. And they have a lot less to do with those things that generate uncertainty. And I'm not trying to suggest to you personally that uncertainty or certainty don't matter. I think they do matter. How you feel about investments, how you feel about the economy, how you feel about your fortunes do in fact matter. Now, earnings are very strong in the first quarter. Companies did a really good job of reaffirming or improving on the outlook they had for the year 2017. Now, this is really not contingent on significant policy stimulus coming out of Washington, D.C., apparently. People were trying to explain away the pickup in business sentiment after the election you know, with great expectations for tax reform and stimulus of one sort or another. But at this point, management teams are just as aware of the extended delays in this policy reform as they are of anything else. Now, seasonally, June stock markets have traded lower just under half the time. But the losses have been very, very small. They're minuscule. So June may have seen some declines historically as a month, but they're hardly noticeable, minuscule, averaging about 0.005% decline in the S&P 500 all the way back to World War II. That's the average, according to Sam Stovall, and he's an investment strategist with CFRA. Now, despite the rhyme, stocks generally just mark time. According to Stovall, he mentioned that in said of the June swoon. June has the second worst frequency for advancers. However, the average price change is basically non-existent. So you don't see a lot of upside movement necessarily in the month of June, so don't look for a big jump to the upside, but don't necessarily look for any kind of a decline. June also follows the month of May, which, you know, has often heralded in weakness and is, in fact, known for the old adage, sell in May and go away. However, the S&P 500 has gained more than 1.2% in May so far and was very near its all-time high in trading on today, on Tuesday's trading. So despite the market's quiet climb higher, some strategists do, in fact, see some risks, and China's debt bubble is noted as one of them. But it's not a huge risk, and it's not a new one. Some strategists say the market could react if Congress looks unlikely to pass any kind of tax reform at all this year, anytime. But how much of the market is still counting on a plan in 2017? Well, I would be willing to bet that that's up for debate. Folks, I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to the Money Talk program here on AM 790. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll close out the show with the last program. So please stick around.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the last segment of tonight's Money Talk program here on AM 790. I am Don Sowa. You know, I was reading and I was quoting an article by James Paulson, as I mentioned earlier on. He's a formerly with Wells Capital Management. He suggested, well, the president, Donald Trump, came in with high expectations and has done nothing but be disappointed at that point, or been a disappointment. The market has no expectations for anything to be done this year on a number of the major programs the president has been embracing. It may be a positive surprise if they actually get something done. I mean, so maybe they lower the bar a little bit, and any positive things are looked at in a very positive way. Now, strategists also say that the Federal Reserve could eventually pose a problem if the market, you know, if the economic data don't actually pick up and the Federal Reserve is seen perhaps as moving ahead with interest rate hikes in a soft economy. Obviously, that's not what they want to do, but the central bank has forecast the two rate increases and perhaps expects to begin the process of shrinking its balance sheet, as I mentioned in the earlier part of the program. They carry over $4 trillion on their balance sheet. They want to start rolling that over. Dallas Fed President Kaplan reiterated that forecast on Squawk Box today. And the market expects the next interest rate hike to be right around June the 14th. Now, there's a high likelihood that it could happen on the 14th of June. It doesn't have to happen. The expectation is there'll be two rate hikes between now and year end. The thing is, there are not a lot of risks out there that are identifiable. If the Fed raises rates, they're boosting them to around 1%. And normally in this kind of inflationary environment, we should probably be at around 3.5% as a Fed fund rate. So the Fed is being extraordinarily accommodative, even though they keep talking about raising interest rates. So it shouldn't be thought of as a problem, but people will try to make a problem out of it. Strategists say that the market has also been lifted by strong U.S. earnings growth and a synchronized global economic recovery. So the rest of the world is looking pretty good, too, including Europe. But it is at a high valuation level here in the U.S. specifically, and that could keep the market from rising much more. That doesn't mean it won't rise, but it may not have a lot of upside, given that the P.E. ratio or the multiples at which the market is trading are higher than the average. Now, they're not high like we saw back in the late 90s, early 2000s, but they're higher. Now, as retail flows continue to move out of the U.S. equities and into international equities, which is the trend we're looking at right now, probably led by Europe and perhaps the EM, which is the emerging markets, the S&P 500 upside following a stronger-than-expected first-quarter earnings season appears capped heading into the historically quieter summer months, according to Julian Emanuel, who's with UBS Equities. The bottom line is he's saying that they're, you know, given a whole series of factors right now and the numbers we're looking at, that perhaps the S&P, which is the index of the largest 500 U.S. companies, maybe there's not as much upside expectation as we move into the second half of the year, given that we're about to move into the lower volume trading period of the summer months, the doldrums, as we call it, summer doldrums. One concern for the market has been the concentrated gains in perhaps a handful of tech names. The S&P 500 is up more than 7.5% for the year so far, but the FANG stocks, F-A-N-G, are up much more than that even. One of those, Amazon, for example, AMZN, broke the psychological $1,000 per share mile marker today. It's up 33% for the year so far. The other stocks in the FANG are like Facebook, Netflix, Alphabet. I believe some people are also going to throw Apple in there too, but it just moved up a great deal since the beginning of the year. FANG is leading the markets, all of these major, major companies, because they're considered important and they're offering products and services that the public seems to want to spend money on. But in general, the proportion of the market being led by technology is not greater than the normal proportion of the lead sector in other up years. You generally get a third of the performance in the equity market from the strongest sector in a year when the market advances. Now, Donald Trump could also become a bit of a risk factor if his threats about trade become sort of hard stances, according to Paul Christopher, who's with the Wells Fargo Investment Institute. He's a strategist. Christopher says he is of the view that there could be a summer sell-off. He said he expects the market to peak soon, and a catalyst could be disappointment when Washington comes up on the policy front. The Federal Reserve has rate hikes and any kind of a political surprise, political unknown that could bounce up. And the president seems not to be too shy about offering a lack of stability when it comes to expectations. Now, most people do think that the market is ignoring the current market valuations. The fact that we expect more Fed rate hikes now and into 2018 may be part of that. At some point, they have to deal with it. Maybe we just readjust back to more average PEs, possibly. The price-to-earnings ratio, you know, of the S&P 500 was 17.6 for the 12-month forward earnings numbers. Those are not outrageous numbers. Wednesday is the final trading day for the month of May, tomorrow, and it was on pace to be the sixth positive month out of seven and the best performing month for the S&P 500 since February. NASDAQ up 2.6% for May alone so far, was on pace for a 7 month of gains, its best winning streak that it's seen since May of 2013. Now, there are several potential catalysts on the horizon for markets to move on tomorrow as investors wait for the Friday jobs report. Chicago PMI number is scheduled to be reported at around 9:45 a.m. Eastern Time. Pending home sales are around 10 a.m. And the Federal Reserve's Beige Book will give you a little bit of a snapshot and outlook on the overall economy at that particular point. Now, you look at all these individual reports that come out in specific sectors representing jobs or home sales or any number of other things, including consumer confidence, and all of them are added together by the strategists and economists to determine the general direction that the market and the economy can go. The market ultimately is going to be some sort of a predictive indicator of the economy, but you know, these moves take time. Major changes, major policy changes out of either Washington, out of the Fed, or even any kind of monetary policy related adjustments can take several months, anywhere from 3 to 6 months, to actually find their way into impacting the overall economy. So if they were to raise interest rates right now, even 2 full percentage, two full rates of 0.5%, you're not going to see any impact in a slowing economy for at least 4 or 5 months. It takes a long time for that to happen. But the markets can move when the announcements are made in anticipation of what will a rate hike mean to the overall economy? What will a higher interest rates mean to the valuations of the stock market? So that's one of the reasons you will see things happen relatively quickly. And the phrase that I tend to use is that the market moves on speculation and then adjusts on the news, or buys on speculation and sells on the news. It depends on the position you're in. Right now, there's speculation about the direction the economy can go, how it's dealing with the world overall. We are noticing pricing valuations in the U.S. being richer than they've been in the past. And we're looking to areas like Europe and the emerging markets to offer slightly better valuations in economies that are improving, at least by comparison to what they're looking at in the U.S. economy. So a diverse portfolio that has some holdings as you inch your way into perhaps developed European stocks and high-quality companies, that may be something you might want to do with your mid-year allocations as you make adjustments here in 2017. Hey, folks, I'm Don Sowa. Thanks for tuning in to tonight's program. This is AM 790, your home of talk and business. Have a great evening.